Hello, I'm Niall Kahn, and this is the PPRO Podcast. Every other week, I sit down with James Booth to discuss the latest innovations, investments, and acquisitions that have taken place in the last weeks. James is on vacation this week, but I'm pleased to say I'm joined by Matt Jackson. Matt, welcome to the podcast, and what exactly do you do at PPRO?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I've been waiting for the invite for a while now, so it's good to join you. I'm a partner manager here in the London office, so that's looking after our existing partnerships and making sure that we can help our partners grow and supporting them with solutions, not only of things we offer currently, but making sure that they can influence our roadmap in a way that allows them to grow as well as us.
Excellent. That sounds very exciting indeed. And tell us, what is the first story that you've brought to the table today?
The biggest story that jumps to mind was the big headline that fintech investments are down, which may be alarming until you look into it, even just a little bit. So for sure, overall, fintech investments are down. But if you strip out Ant Financial's $14 billion US dollar fundraise from last year, it's actually a really rosy picture for fintech investments across the world and specifically in certain jurisdictions. So stripping out that Ant Financial fundraise, there was a 28% increase in value on roughly the same amount of deals. And there's history with this sort of data as well. In 2016, Ant Financial raised $4.5 billion US dollars. And in 2017, we saw a drop because they didn't have a big fundraising round. So while the headline may cause alarm, it's actually a really positive outlook for fintech investments across the globe.
I was also surprised to see how alarmist this headline was at first. And then after like a little bit of scratching, it doesn't seem that bad at all. On a national level, investments have really ticked up quite a bit. In the UK, it's doubled. In Germany, it's also doubled. Sweden has quadrupled, presumably because of the fundraising from Klarna. But it seems that they're trying to kind of tie this into the American trade war.
Yeah, and I think the interesting part of this for me is that the number of investments hasn't really grown as much as the value of the investment. So not only are we seeing an increase in the number of probably about 25% globally, but the value is doubling in certain jurisdictions. And as you mentioned, quadrupling in Sweden. So it's actually a really positive outlook tagged onto an alarmist headline.
Yeah, and it seems like, as we just mentioned there, with all the European countries doubling and quadrupling their figures, a lot of the investments have been focused around Europe rather than Asia or North America.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that reflects the maturity of the fintech market in those spaces. Europe tends to be thought of as a fintech hub, and I think we'll talk about fintech hubs a little bit later. But the number and scale of the businesses in Europe is different to across the globe. America is some way behind, and with Asia Pacific being dominated by a few really massive players, it's a very different market in Europe. One of the things that jumped out for me, obviously with my PPRO hat on, was that 25% of all of the deals were in payments businesses. And so for us, that's really positive from PPRO, but I think it reflects the interest in the payments market and how that there's a lot of disruption still yet to come.
Very exciting stuff. And you already set up the perfect transition. So let's actually talk about Germany possibly replacing the UK as a fintech hub. The UK has been in the news lately because of Brexit for the last, I don't know, it has been 2 years or a year.
Yeah. And on behalf of the British population, I'd like to apologize for that. I feel like I need to say that every time I'm talking to somebody based in Europe. I looked into this a little bit more than just where the news article took you. And it's interesting. It's another alarmist headline. And then when you dig a little deeper, I don't think it's as prevalent as maybe the headline's making out. So the headline actually came from a press release from a chap called Jochen Biedermann, who's a senior advisor at the Frankfurt Main Finance Ministry.
No, do you think he has a vested interest in this?
I think he might be. So he states four large banks have moved operations to Frankfurt, and I dug into one of them. Barclays have indeed moved operations to Frankfurt, but the scale of that is 40 to 50 investment trading jobs. So to say operations would imply a much larger scale, and I think Barclays still maintains a significantly larger presence in London. One of the things he mentions is that fintechs will tend to follow big banks, and I think that is part of it. There's a competition for talent, and sometimes people move out of the big banks and look to move into the fintech space. Realistically, I think it's a really good piece of marketing to encourage more fintechs to move, and I think there are reasons why some fintechs may move or choose to start up. In Germany, the cost of living is a little bit cheaper. Sometimes the quality of life's better. Will Brexit have an impact on that, and will we see some EU workers maybe based in London now return returning at some point to the EU. I think there may be some of that. But will it be to Germany? I don't know. Lithuania has got a really favourable regulatory environment for fintechs at the moment. So I think they speak of being able to gain a licence within 3 months within Lithuania, which means you can then operate across the EU. I think there will be movement away from London at some point. I don't necessarily see that as a completely negative thing. I think London will still have a significant presence with the likes of companies like Starling and Monzo, but I don't think it's as a bigger worry as maybe the headline is alarming us to.
Yeah, what do you think about fintech companies moving to Dublin? It seems like an obvious choice. That's an English-speaking country. It's, I don't know, closer to the US than the UK by a smidge. It seems to be a kind of a logical place for a lot of fintech companies to land.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's a really relevant market. I think Dublin and Ireland are trying to be a hub for financial institutions as well as fintechs, and we will see some of that go there. I think a lot of it as well will depend where the talent wants to work, and I think London as a city still attracts the type of workers that we see within the fintech space, and I think what we'll see is some movement. We'll see some startups choosing to start in different jurisdictions, but London will still be really relevant for the fintech industry globally.
Let's stay on the European continent and let's talk about the Financial Conduct Authority.
Okay, yeah, so the FCA being the regulatory body within the UK, and as of now, with an FCA licence, you can operate in Europe, but if we hard Brexit, then that may change. As part of PSD2 and a whole raft of other initiatives, there's been a lot of worry around strong customer authentication and whether companies will be ready, and that sort of distracted people from the preparedness they needed to have around open banking. So around about the same time that it was announced strong customer authentication would have an extension to its deadline, there was a six-month extension announced to open banking. And what this means is companies will no longer be able to build or develop products that rely on screen scraping, and they'll have to have deeper integrations through APIs into banks, and banks have to provide those APIs and allow third-party providers access to them. And as of yet, I don't think the APIs are quite ready across the board.
Yeah, there's been a lot of issues between the banks and the third-party providers coming to an understanding about what the next steps are and what exactly they have to do to fully integrate. And this has been something that one of PPRO's advisors, Ralph Olhausen, has been working on tirelessly the last months, is trying to come to this understanding.
Yeah, for sure. And I think institutions have been really good at it and have developed what they need to do, and others haven't. And given the relatively large number of institutions that this applies to, I think the FCA were concerned that there could be a massive disruption of service, which affects the individuals that these sorts of regulations are trying to protect and serve. And so they've announced a 6 month extension as a mitigation to that.
So that kind of follows in lines of Brexit as well, right? Another extension after extension. But we'll see if this maybe wraps up quicker than Brexit does.
Yeah, I think it might be a race to the bottom there, but yeah. Okay, the other news story that caught my attention was WhatsApp, despite not being fully ready in India yet, are already seemingly exploring Indonesia as their next market to allow payments. And there's some key differences in those markets and the regulatory environment within them, which means that actually it's almost a completely different product that they're going to need to develop. So within India, it's WhatsApp's biggest market. They speak of having 400 million monthly active users. And the tagline they have there is that it's as easy to pay someone as it is to send a message. I think in a market like India, that's really relevant. It really lends itself to being very financially inclusive, which is an issue within India. As I understand it, and from what I can read, they're in the final stages of passing the regulation. They had really positive messages coming out of the IT and telecom minister, Ravi Shankar Prasad, but the central government still had concerns about where they were holding the data and how they were authenticating these users. So I think there's still some way to go. I think they're targeting 2019 to have a product rolled out in India, and I think we'll see a massive uptake of that across that user base. I think Richard spoke on the last podcast about how Apple Card is a sweet spot for Apple, who have millions of users that are really sticky to Apple, and I think WhatsApp will be really similar. The one thing that I have a question in my mind about with regards to WhatsApp in India is, are Facebook using this as a testing ground in terms of how they can adhere to local regulations for Libra, which seems to be their much more strategic play as an organization?
That's a really interesting point, yeah.
Yeah, so that's India. So they hope to be out with a product in 2019, but they're already looking further afield to Indonesia now, which again is a very different market in terms of the regulatory environment. It's very restricted there with some quite prohibitive licensing regulations. In that market, they're not going to be able to offer direct peer-to-peer payments, and instead what they'll need to do is provide a platform for local wallets. And this is Indonesia's way of, I guess, keeping currency in country and also making sure that large multinationals don't come in and dominate a space that they would like to build up for their own nationals. Interestingly, I found that Indonesia is one of the top five markets for WhatsApp. It has 100 million users monthly and is a really high growth area for e-com. So perhaps the play there is B2C for WhatsApp and potentially looking to replicate some of the features that WeChat Pay has in China, where you can, via QR code, pay almost anybody.
Yeah, Indonesia is a very interesting market at the moment because they have 38% e-commerce growth year on year, and that's compared to 28% in the Asia Pacific region. As well as from data from our almanac, we have Indonesia with a 14% market share for e-wallets. So this is a massive growth area in the country, and with such a young population as well, and with such a high use of cell phones, it's pretty much an ideal place for them to start.
Yeah, for sure. And I think there are a lot of jurisdictions within emerging markets that have similar regulatory environments. And so WhatsApp, again, could be using this as a testing ground for a bigger rollout into these emerging markets, where I think similar demographics and growth rates around e-commerce would really lend itself to a massive expansion for that business model.
Let's move on to our last story of the day, which is the Apple credit card, something that you touched on earlier in our conversation. The story in general reminds me of an ad campaign in the US that the tagline was, "What's in your wallet?" And if the answer to that is Apple's new credit card, it shouldn't be in there. You should take it out of your wallet, and you shouldn't put it in your jeans because it will stain the credit card.
Yeah, I mean, you just think if Steve Jobs was still around, this sort of testing would have been done ahead of time. I think there's a negative news story that the Apple card can't be used in leather wallets, and you shouldn't be keeping it in your jeans either because it's liable to stain or damage the card. I think it's a negative spin on what otherwise, from certainly what I've read, is a really positive news story around the product. So everything I've heard about Apple Card has been the user onboarding flow is fantastic. It's really user-friendly. The way you can monitor your accounts is great, but they seemingly have a problem with the card itself and not being able to keep it in leather wallets, which I would assume there's a very high percentage of wallets that are leather.
It reminds me when the first iPhone came out and you had to buy a cell phone case for your iPhone because you didn't want the back to get scratched. Do you imagine this is going to be a whole new market segment for Apple, is that they can sell credit card protection cases?
It wouldn't surprise me, and what we see with Apple products is that when something comes out, the ecosystem that pops up around an Apple product, so you know, you'll see very quickly, I'm guessing, silicon cases for your Apple card pop up on Amazon and eBay selling for a dollar or something like that. Around the Apple card in itself, there's another story which I actually heard on another podcast, was that it was expected Apple and Goldman Sachs, the sponsor bank, would take a restricted, safe view on who they would onboard, but it's actually been noted that they are taking on some subprime business. And I think in the US, Niall, you'll know better than I, that credit scores are deemed FICO scores.
Yes, I believe so. As someone who just no longer lives in the US, I have no idea.
I mean, you lived in the US.
Yeah.
And there's a level at which anything below that score is subprime. I think it's something around 520 or something like that. And there's people that are being awarded Apple cards with FICO scores of 460. Now, again, after digging a little deeper into that, you've got to look at, you know, are these users really subprime? So they've got an iPhone, which could be £1,000 or, you know, £700 or £600. Is that really someone who's subprime? And again, digging into the story a little bit further, what it seems is they've been offered a slightly higher interest rate and a lower credit limit. So it seems a responsible way of lending, and it seems it's a good way to get users on board while not exposing them to too much risk. But it's just an interesting way that I don't think the market saw Apple and Goldman going.
No, that's really interesting, because Goldman Sachs is one of the companies that was responsible for the 2008 crash because of their subprime mortgage lending.
Yeah, for sure. You know, whilst when you hear subprime, you do get the fear, and especially with a lot of the economic data coming out may point to a recession at some point in the near future, it would seem that this level of subprime lending is much more responsible.
We will see. This is something that we can pick up on in a few years, perhaps. We can find out what the rate of people crashing out of the Apple Card is.
Yeah, for sure.
Very interesting. Well, Matt, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
No worries, Niall. Thanks for having me. Look forward to coming back again.
Excellent. Until next time.
See you later.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you're enjoying it, make sure to leave a review on iTunes. As usual, you can find PPro on Twitter and Instagram at PPro_payments. Thanks to Andre Ratke for editing the episode. I've been Niall Kahn, and until next time.